If you've had a fracture since turning 50, you could have osteoporosis, the big O. It's serious, but it's also treatable. Ask your doctor about a bone density scan today and say no to the big O.
A disease education message from Amgen Australia.
Well, yesterday we mentioned the recently released white paper from the New South Wales Productivity Commission. In total, it made 60 recommendations which are aimed at improving the living standards as well as the economic muscle of the state. And look, by no means are the ideas geographically limited to New South Wales, although it did come from the state's Productivity Commission. I think most of these ideas would pretty easily and equally apply in Queensland, the ACT, and beyond. But of all the recommendations made, two stood out to me. Two. The first concerned embracing recycled water, and we did have a look at that yesterday. The second, however, was concerning nuclear power. Now, in short, the Productivity Commission suggests lifting the ban on nuclear energy generation, and in so doing, allowing small-scale nuclear reactors, what we call small modular reactors, to help underpin New South Wales' energy supply. But as I say, this could apply right around the country. And overseas, especially in the United Kingdom, the United States, they're powering ahead with developing this very technology. I think we should get on board. And someone who agrees is Robert Parker, member of the Australian Nuclear Association, but also founder of Nuclear for Climate Australia. And he joins us on the line. Robert, nice to talk with you once again.
Good. Thank you, Michael.
I note that the New South Wales Treasurer, Dominic Perrottet, who's received this document, acknowledged that some of the ideas in the report were, as he said, explosive, and he, I don't know if that's a wise choice of words when speaking about nuclear energy, but nonetheless, he particularly spoke to nuclear in saying that. So I don't know if you've got the warm embrace of the Treasury yet, but why would this be a good idea?
Well, I think that what they're recognising at present is that they're wandering through a bit of a morass of energy options at present. AEMO, that's the Australian Electricity Marketing Operator, has looked at various options around renewables. But there is no clear final goal to where we're headed. And so wandering through their maths, we're seeing issues such as government subsidies to things like rooftop solar, gas turbine, battery incentive, the snowy hydro, and the renewable energy targets. And all these plans, these are out-of-market plans. These are the government trying to intervene to get some sense of where they're going. But there's no clear final endpoint. And studies in Australia and overseas found that we must be defining that endpoint. And if that endpoint is to have a fully decarbonised electricity system, then that's the goal we should be aiming for. Now, the Productivity Commission, from my reading of their report, have recognised this. And we need to be quite clear about where the costs of our typical electricity bill are. About one third of our bill is actually the generator. Two thirds of it is our transmission, distribution and retail. So if we try to save $1 on generation, but cost ourselves $2 on an expensive distribution system, we haven't really saved ourselves anything. And I think this is where our policy is going wrong. As the Productivity Commission's identified, we need to be looking at the total system costs of electricity, not just the generators.
And as far as that is concerned, is the argument that if you were to put in place some nuclear reactors, small modular or traditional size, that they would be rather easily incorporated into the existing transmission infrastructure, whereas solar farms and certainly wind farms are not?
Exactly, Michael. You've hit it on the head. If we put in small nuclear power plants, less than, say, 300 megawatt size, we can fit those into our grid. We can use our existing cooling facilities. We can use our existing infrastructure. And we can build them at locations, the nodal points of the grid, with very little cost incurred. But if we go down this renewables route, especially with things like batteries and storage and pump storage and all of these devices, we're going to have two or three times the grid size And that's the major cost of our electricity bill. It's not the generator. So talk of, oh, wind or solar being cheap, this is the point entirely, especially as we go to further steps to try to address our low carbon future.
Well, we often hear, don't we, Robert, this argument, well, we've got to let the market decide. I mean, all sides of politics, irrespective of whether they believe in a future for fossil fuels or in a completely renewable future, all say we should let the market decide. They all then go and manipulate it with, as you say, subsidies and who knows what, but they still trot out that meme, let the market decide. But how can the market evaluate the merits or detriments of nuclear electricity generation if it remains illegal under law?
Well, this is where we've been badly let down, for example, by AEMO and CSIRO. As you're aware, no doubt, they came out and told the public that small nuclear power plants were going to cost $16,200 per kilowatt installed and $300 a megawatt. I mean, really, Michael, do they really expect us to believe that the people of Bangladesh and Pakistan and China are paying $300 a megawatt hour for electricity? Of course they're not. We've only got to look at our Commonwealth cousins in Canada. Let's look at the state of Ontario. They've got emissions there. It's a nuclear-powered state. Their emissions are less than 20 grams per kilowatt hour compared to ours in Australia at about 800. And yet they're paying less than half for their retail electricity. The mums and dads over there are paying about 14 cents. And we're paying close to 24, 25. So the truth of the matter is that in a nuclear, a consolidated nuclear grid, we can have low-cost electricity, but we've got to stop poisoning the pond, as I call it, with these false reports alleging that we've got ridiculous prices like $16,200. They do not occur. There's 50 nuclear power plants being built globally at present in places, as I said, like Bangladesh, Pakistan, Egypt, Turkey. Do people really think they're paying those sorts of prices? Of course they're not.
The other thing that needs to be outlined here too, Robert, and I'll hand this to you, is the issue of the size of the reactor, because there is still, among many people, the Chernobyl effect. You know what I mean by that.
Yes.
People say, well, look, I mean, not in my backyard and all this sort of stuff. But what we're now talking about, and certainly what the New South Wales Productivity Commission under Mr. Akerstract is looking at, the small modular reactors. And, for example, Rolls-Royce, I think a brand most people trust because, you know, when they get in a jet, they tend to fly with a Rolls-Royce engine. They are working on this in the United Kingdom. In the United States, there are companies working on this. What's the difference between a small modular reactor and a traditional size reactor that we would know, say, Fukushima, whatever?
Okay. If we take the small, for example, one being currently designed by General Electric, who are a very respected company all around the world, that small nuclear power plant is going to be built in a silo in the ground, and it will have about one quarter of the amount of nuclear fuel that you would have in a large plant. It's being designed to be able to control its heat evolution, or prevent a meltdown should something happen, and it can do that for at least 7 days. So these things are what we call passively controlled, and they are very safe. And in the event of an issue with those plants, the radioactivity would not leave the boundary of the plant. They're being designed to consolidate all that material. So they will be a lot safer. But keep in mind, and I will stress this, that the large light water nuclear power plants that we've had in the West have got the safest track record of any energy source yet to date. And even at Fukushima, nobody was killed there as a result of radiation. And I visited Fukushima, and I must stress that. So we're really making something that is extremely safe at present even more safe.
Just before you go, the warmth or otherwise from our political leaders as to this technology, there are some of the National Party which have been quite vocal in their support of at least doing away with the ban on nuclear energy and then saying, well, then let's see if it stacks up financially or from a technology point of view. But beyond a few of those voices, and I think they're voices of reason, but beyond a few of those, what's the mood in the political circles about nuclear? I mean, I would have thought in my ignorance that the left, particularly the Labor Party, would be all over this like a rash, because if they want to get zero carbon dioxide emissions but also have jobs in the, you know, the Hunter Valley and these sort of places, that the future that is nuclear oriented would be a pretty obvious one to me. But I'm not hearing anything much from them.
Well, I think a tremendous initiative that's underway in federal parliament is a Friend of Nuclear group, which is a bipartisan group that's looking to inform the members of the House on the latest in nuclear technology. And that's a great initiative. But as you say quite correctly, the history of nuclear energy around the world has been built by social democracies. They've been under government direction and control. And they have been with predominantly unionised workforces, and they would be a tremendous fillip or benefit to regional New South Wales for long-term secure jobs, because these plants last for 80 to 100 years. That's what the new ones will do. And they will create generations of jobs in regional New South Wales and elsewhere in Australia for many families to have clean, high-tech jobs for many years and give tremendous community stability and great increased levels of education to the people working in those plants. Mm. That would be a real shot in the arm for Australia.
I think it's a good idea. I think the Productivity Commission agrees. All we need now is the politicians to show some leadership. Good to talk to you again, Robert. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Robert Parker there, member of the Australian Nuclear Association, and as I said, also founder of Nuclear for Climate Australia.